Wow, what an honor to be here. It has been 23 years. I remember being at the very first meeting, Bill, back in the hospital. Remember that? In fact, I sat next to you. And I remember thinking, wow, where is this going to take us? And here I am. My daughter heard that I was speaking. She goes, Brian, she goes, again? So, but I wanted to share some experiences with you that are a lot different. Over 23 years, a lot has happened. 23 years ago, I was pregnant with the son that I saw on the other side who convinced me to come back. And now he's 23 years old. My life has changed. And, of course, with, as Bill said, from the perspective of a human being, we all have these incredible human experiences. So for each near-death experience, it's different. And it's influenced by different aspects, whether it's our environment, our belief system, where we come from, and so on. As a counselor and somebody now who works in counseling and does hypnotherapy and does healing work, for the last 5 years, I have been overwhelmed and amazed at the commonality and the huge spiritual experience that my clients have, and how common certain elements are. The beauty of this is all of us are going to get to face this beautiful thing called death. Death is a part of living. Death is not something to be feared, because if you fear death, then you fear life. And so death is something that we should embrace and enjoy, because each one of us will have the opportunity to encounter it. I'm constantly always facing death. I've had cancer, what, a couple times, Bill? You've had your own struggles where I've literally fasted and prayed for you because I wondered if Bill was going to make it. And it just seems to be very common with near-death experiencers to go through these struggles of facing death, until we embrace and understand fully the experience. But what's most awesome is the continued experiences that we have. That's what's really common about the near-death experience for those who have very deep experiences, is how common it is for us to continue to have these out-of-body experiences. And I have been single after my divorce for a long time, worried and wondering if anybody would really handle, you know, the kind of lifestyle that I live. When my son got married and he invited his wife to come live with us, he says, I've got to tell you something about my mom. She's a bit weird. Now, I'm a mother-in-law, of course I'm weird. And then he says, no, she's a bit, well, she's crazy. Yeah, I'm a bit crazy. So I said, okay, that's okay. And he says, well, I guess I should explain it this way. He says, when you come to live in our house, if you happen to see things move through the hallway on their own, don't worry about it. Just ignore it. It's just common, okay? Her eyes just got real big. And then he says, well, that's the small part. I should tell you about, just in case you hear the door knock 3 times, that's from my mom. Don't answer it. And then he said, the next thing he says, just in case you see somebody dressed in white smiling and going toward my mom's room, really ignore it and go back to sleep. He says, then you don't have to be too concerned. And now this poor girl, I want you to know, when she moved into my house, she locked herself, no joke, locked herself into the bedroom for 30 days and wouldn't even come out for dinner. My son literally had to take food up to her. She was that frightened. And sure enough, she lived with us for 2 years, and she got to experience quite a bit. And it was quite fun. The next one came along, the next person to get married. And she says, now, I just got to warn you about my mother-in-law. If you're going to go live with her, she's just a little bit weird. Let me explain. She's just a little bit crazy. And if you see anything move around in the house, just don't worry about it. Let it go on by. About a year ago, I got a kick out of my kids. You know, they were going through a security check, and you know how you do people find? They were on people find looking for people. They wanted to find out all the dirty details about people. I had paid that money, and my daughter wanted to find out about herself since she was getting an apartment. And so she had this typing in everybody's name to find out about what their records were, and criminal records, and what perverts were in the neighborhood. And then she got through and got bored, and then she says, "Hey, Danny, you have anyone you want to check out?" "Yeah, let's go through it." So an hour went by, and they were giggling and laughing, and then they said, "Hey, Mom, is there anybody you want to check out?" I says, "Oh, for Pete's sake, no." I said, "I don't have to. I really don't have to. That's no lie. I look in your eyes, and that's over." Then they laughed and thought that was cute. And they says, "Hey, Mom, you know, you remember I told you last week that there might be somebody from your past, like an old boyfriend?" I said, "There's no one. It was just your dad. Do you want to look up on your dad? Hey, I don't have any problem with that. I'd like to find out what's going on with him lately. He hasn't paid alimony in years. I'd like to find out." And then they said, no. I mean, there's got to be somebody. And so I said, "Well, there was this guy 30-something years ago. Remember I told you about him?" "Oh, yeah. What happened to him?" And I says, "I think he's dead." And he says, "Well, you have that gift. Is he dead or is he not?" And I says, "I'm not sure. I don't know." I says, "You can check if you want." And so they punched in his name. "Oh, what was his middle name?" And blah, 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 blah. And so they looked it up, and my oldest daughter found him. And he had been off the grid forever. Lo and behold, she decided to make a phone call. She was curious about the man her mom had been dating, since there was only her dad that she knew of, and she just thought it was curious. And she called him up, and the first thing she said is, "Hi, my name is Noelle Wallace, and my mom's told me a lot about you over the years, and just kind of wanted to say hi and get to know you. You know Ronell Wallace?" And he says, "Oh, yeah, I know your mom. She's crazy." Really? I heard that. I walked away from the room. I says, "What a jerk. Of course I'm crazy." So anyway, then they talked and talked for 2 weeks every day. And so finally, at one point, I was going by the bedroom, and I think he heard my voice, and he says, "Get your mom on the phone." And so then I went, "He really wants to talk to me?" "Yeah, get him on the phone." "You sure he wants to talk to Crazy?" And I heard him laugh. So I got on the phone, and I said, "Yes, this is Mrs. Crazy." Then we got talking, and we haven't stopped talking since. So that you know, we just got married last week. So he's here tonight. And so what I want to do is kind of share with you an opportunity to share a song. That's what made me fall in love with him in the first place. But the song is really about you. It's not about us. It's about you. James knew me before, when I was different. And now he knows me crazy. And knew me a different type of crazy. So I am grateful for that. Each one of us are crazy and unique. And what I want to tell you is, be you. If anything I've learned from my near-death experience is, be you. I've been judged, I've been criticized, I've been put on television shows just as much as the movie has come out, and done interviews for over, 25 years. And, you know, I've been raked over the coals for my near-death experience. And just be me is what I've learned to do. That's the first rule, the top of the list. I'll have a few. If you're not you, then you're in trouble because everyone else is taken. You better figure out you're going to be you. Although I do, you know, once in a while I do therapy sessions and someone thinks they're Cleopatra. I can't tell you how many Cleopatras I've heard. So anyway, now I'd like to introduce to you, I am now Ronell Hathaway, and so I'd like to introduce James Hathaway. James.
Well, hi. I'm James. Ever since I've gotten to know her, I've been writing songs for a long time, and this isn't something I've written, but this is something that I play for her when she's kind of not feeling too well, and it seems to help her feel better. It's a song that was made famous by Garth Brooks, even though it was written by Bob Dylan. It's called "To Make You Feel My Love." When the rain is blowing in your face, and the whole world is
on your case. I will offer you a warm embrace to make you feel my love. When evening shadows and the stars appear, and there is no one to dry your tears, I will hold you for a million years to make you feel my love. I know you haven't made your mind up yet, but I will never do you wrong. I've known it from the moment that we met. No doubt my mind's where I belong. I'd go hungry, I'd go black and blue to try to pay for that big old expensive ring for you. To make you happy, make your dreams come true, to make you feel my love. Storms are raging on a rolling sea, down a highway of regret. The winds of change are blowing wild and free, but you ain't seen nothing like her yet. There ain't nothing that I wouldn't do to the ends of the earth for you, to make you happy, make your dreams come true, to make you feel my love.
Thank you.
The reason I shared that song with you is because I have something called RSD. That is something that occurred since I last saw you. I had a stroke and came down with... I apologize. Every nerve ending in my body feels like a bonfire again, except it's worse than my burns were in the plane crash. And so when I have an attack, it flares up just like I'm literally inside a fire. It happens quite often, especially when I get nervous. And Blessed James plays that song for me when I'm in a lot of pain. And when we cry together and try to sing this song, I'm thinking about you. No matter what the winds of change come, no matter how hard they blow, I will do whatever it takes come out and teach you about what love is, because that is the energy and which flows on the other side. We're in a wonderful life to learn about and experience, an experience called love. And I'm sure many near-death experiencers have told you that, but I can tell you that love is not just a feeling or an emotion. When I was on the other side, my grandmother made it very, very, very clear to me that it is everything. It is all that what the universe spins around. It is what causes the earth to go around the sun. It is what causes a seed to come out of the earth and turn into a flower to its fullest potential. You are the fullest potential of what love is. I was in a plane crash. I was called crazy because I had these gifts of intuitiveness. And I knew before the plane crash happened that I was going to be in a plane crash. So on this trip, before I left, I wrote out this long last will and testament. And I folded it up and I put it in a suitcase. We landed at Rialto Airport where my parents were standing. And I handed the suitcase, knowing that I was handing over my destiny, over to my parents. And I left my two little kids with my parents. I said, please, Mom, do me a favor. Will you take care of the kids as though they were your own? And she says, oh, Renelle, of course I will. I raised seven of you. And I said, I know, but just please love them like they were your own. And immediately my mother, the mother that she always just like this, and go, okay, what's the matter? I said, nothing, Mom, don't worry about it. I said, there's a piece of paper, and I got to go because Terry's calling. There's a piece of paper in the suitcase. Whatever happens, just put it someplace safe, and we'll talk about it later just in case something happens. I love you. See you later, Mom. Bye. And then suddenly I heard crinkle, 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 and then I heard, last will and testament. Oh, my gosh. Renelle, you get back here right now. When she said that, I said, oh, Mom, stop that. She goes, I mean it. I'm not taking care of your kids. I said, Mom, it's going to be fine. Don't worry about it. We came up here to Utah, and it was on the trip coming home that we hit a horrible snowstorm. And I'm giving you the Reader's Digest version because I want to get to the near-death experience. And I want to get to the part of an experience I had this Christmas. I visited Egypt. And I think it's time now. I've waited a long time. I've waited 23 years to talk about events that are about to happen. And the reason is because they're happening. And I think it's time for you to know. And I think it's time for you to get prepared. And I think it's time for you to get out and start reaching out and loving people and letting go of the past. Letting go of your barriers that keep you from loving others. If there is something that's keeping you from calling that friend that you haven't talked to in a long time, get on the phone and call them. If you are working for that incredible boat that you've been waiting all summer to jump into, forget it. It's time for you to spend a little time with the people that you love. It's time for you to feel and know what joy feels like and what hope feels like. It's time to start feeling. Feeling is very difficult because we get so anesthetized by all the hurt and the anger and the bitterness that we feel. And I was anesthetized by the abuse that my husband was putting me through. This is something else that I don't talk about that's coming out in my new book. But my husband put that plane into the mountain on purpose. That's something I don't and haven't talked about. He tried to commit suicide and kill me. He did it, and I am grateful to him. He's left me with scars that have caused a great deal of learning, a great deal of depth and of experience. It's caused people to stare and wonder, and allowed me the opportunity to open my arms to tell him about my near-death experience. When we hit the mountain and the plane exploded, I looked around and I noticed the plane was completely on fire. It was during a snowstorm. We hit the mountain. We couldn't see it. It came up very quickly. I screamed, the mountain, the mountain. And he put the plane into the mountain, belly up. And when he did, we started skipping up the side of the mountain. And sparks and flames started hitting out to the side. I saw a little cliff and I knew that once the plane nosed into the cliff that we would be dead. At the speed we were going, in the snow that we were in, there was no chance. There was no opportunity for life. I said the sinner's prayer, please forgive me for everything I've done and take care of my kids. At that very moment, the plane came to a total stop in front of a cliff. I couldn't believe it. I thought for sure we'd nose into that and it would be over. In the silence, Terry screamed, get out, get out. I couldn't believe it. We just survived a plane crash. What's wrong with you? I looked over and I noticed flames were now completely enveloping the plane. I reached over to the door. I couldn't get it open. And then I crouched over and I took my foot and I gave it one large, hard kick. The fuel from the fuel pump had built up inside the plane. And so when the fuel hit with the flames, a large backdraft explosion took place. In that backdraft explosion, it took my body and sucked it out of the plane, out onto the wingtip, and threw me there on fire. My first thought was, oh my gosh, what do? I'm like the stuntman in the movies. I gotta roll, I gotta get the flames out. And I looked all over and all I could find were rocks and snow coming down. And I was on fire and the pain, if you've ever even been burned lately by a frying pan, you know, that little tiny stinging sensation that just never gives up and it hurts so stinking bad. Imagine your whole body engulfed like that. And I'm still suffering it. And so I went over to a rock. I reached over and I started patting out the flames on my hands because I didn't realize that your skin is like paper. It catches on fire just like paper. And so I started putting out the flames. And as soon as this wet snow had started coming over and putting out the rest of the flames on my body, I looked around and tried to see the plane in this fog and snow. And I saw the plane, and I saw a 30-foot flame in the air. And the first thing I realized was I was alone. Terry, where are you? Where are you, Terry? Oh my gosh, he didn't get out. No, you wouldn't do this to me. God, you wouldn't do this to me. You wouldn't leave me up here alone to die. You just wouldn't do this to me. I've been a good person my whole life. I felt like I was owed somehow some divine privilege because I was a good person. I saw the flame. I started crawling over to the flame. The heat was driving me back. It was so hot. But I looked inside the flame and I saw Terry's body hunched over the steering column. As far as I could see, he was burning alive, and there was nothing I could do. I screamed, "Get out! Get out!" He wouldn't get up. I said, "Get out!" And then I made it back to the rock, and I started to cry. I said, "If there is a God alive, I need your help, and I need it now." I, for once, wanted to believe that there was a tangible God, a tangible person, not something that I was taught as a kid to believe in, but an actual person. I said, "If there's a God alive, help me. Help me now." And in that moment, Terry stood up inside the flame, and he walked directly out. And when he walked out, he walked across the wingtip to where I was. And what was so shocking, he was completely unscathed. There were no burns. His hands were burned. His face was red. But the rest of him was completely unscathed. And yet he was in the fire longer than I. I looked down at me, and I noticed that my lips were black and charred and my hair was black and charred. I could see skin hanging from my fingertips. I could see large holes in my jeans. Everything on top from my waist up was burned off except for a piece of carpet that glued to my chest from the explosion. It had literally melted to my chest. And I couldn't believe what I was looking at. And Terry started looking around. I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Well, where's the man that pulled me out?" I says, "What are you talking about?" He says, the man with the large white hand, he pulled me out of the flames. Where'd he go?" I said, "Terry, there was no man." Later he told me that he heard a voice say to him, "Sitting here is suicide and you know it. Get up." And so he stood up and that hand helped him out of the fire. We then made a decision to walk in a snowstorm 5.5 miles in a blizzard to get out of those mountains. We finally made it to a roadside. I sat there with my arms up in the air, waving, waving. My head was now swollen out to the distance of my shoulders from the severity of the burns. 20 minutes. Imagine standing there in that kind of pain, waving and watching cars go by and no one stopping. I swore that if I ever lived through it, I would always help somebody in need. And it was a commitment that I still keep to this day, that I will always help somebody in need. I use my heart, my mind, my prayer, my soul when I can't be. But I will be there. I was taken to a small hospital that was literally only a mile from where we walked to. They told me I had 1% chance to live. Because of hypothermia and the severe burns, I had very little chance. They'd taken everything off of me and they were trying to talk as loud as they could because of the swelling and I couldn't see. And they said, "Renelle, what we'd like to do is get you to, what would you think about getting, well, the easiest way to save your soul, you know, just what's left of your life is getting you on a plane or helicopter. Would you like to do that?" Well, yeah, that was my comment too. You've got to be kidding. Serious? Suddenly I heard them go over and talk to Terry because there was no way. I was trying to scream and gargle out of what was left of my throat. And then I heard, blah, 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 plane crash, you know, blah, blah, blah. Ambulance, blah, 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 plane, helicopter. And then all of a sudden Terry started screaming, "Whoa!" And then it was perfect. Then I could finally scream with him, "Whoa!" And for the first time in our lives, and the only time in our lives, we did anything in harmony. They got us out about 20 minutes, and I felt like somebody had thrown this large brick on my chest, and I was having a very difficult time breathing. And I said, "Somebody help me, I can't breathe, I can't breathe." And the male nurse bent down to my ear and he said, "Stop trying. We'll do all the work for you." Wow. Lesson two. Words are powerful. Every word that comes from the utter lips of your mouth have power. And especially when they're met with emotion. It was that moment that I decided to die and give up and let someone else do the work for me. Yay. You go for it. I'm tired. I'm pain. Go for it. You do all the work for me. And then in that second, I saw my body laying on a gurney, charred. Wasn't sure it was me. Wait, it can't be. Then I saw my hand fall off the gurney, and I saw something, and all the char and swollenness. And I absolutely wore this tonight only because I thought it matched. But it was the ring I was wearing the day of the plane crash. 23 years ago, there was a man sitting at Ian's named Jonathan, and he was a jeweler. And Jonathan was kind enough to fix the ring so that I could still wear it, to remind me of that very sacred and special day. The next thing that I saw was my life review, and I saw the pain and the suffering I caused others, because that immediately was what my mind went to. We do that. When we think about our lives, we think, look back for a second. Just think about this last week. I want you to think about this last week. Immediately, you start thinking about the things you didn't get done, the things you had done, I should have done, would have, could have, and should have. Or you think about something that you really shouldn't have done. And James happened to be one of those people that I felt I'd hurt. And this is the first time I've had the opportunity ever to publicly apologize to him for hurting him so many years ago. I didn't think God had forgiven me. And I looked in this life review that was circumference around me. When you have a near-death experience, your spirit then doesn't need to see this way, or peripheral. It's all the way around you. You have a knowing and a seeing all the way. Your spirit is able to see all things, at all dimensions and all levels, all colors, all sounds. And so there I sat and watched my life review, and I kept looking for the things I'd done to him. They just simply were not there. I realized what forgiveness really does do. It wipes the slate clean. That same pain and hurt that I kept looking for is now standing with me, and I'm married to him. What a gift. What a gift of love that God loved me enough in all my pain with RSD one night to scream out, "Where is my husband I was promised?" I had a coming to Jesus meeting. "Where is this husband I was promised? I was promised I'd get married again. Where is he?" 2 weeks later, the phone call to James. And shortly after, James appeared. And it's been a year. We had our ups and downs. He was quite shocked when he saw me. I was quite shocked when I saw you. You want to tell him what happened? Talk about judgment. Yeah, he lived in the boonies in a place called Friendship. Friendship, Wisconsin. A population 900, actually 90.
And I had hair about down to here.
No, it was down to here. Go ahead.
Scruffy looking, hiding in the middle of the world.
What else? Hadn't taken a bath in 4 days.
No, that's because I had to drove across the country.
Yeah, that's right. He said in Wisconsin you only need to take a bath every 4 days. Now come on over here, honey.
In my defense, I was driving across the country for like 3 or 4 days, so...
Yeah, so he was laying on the lawn, and I was on the phone, and my daughter says, "Mom, there's this homeless man out on the lawn." She literally did. She says, "Go get rid of him. I'm not getting near him."
Yeah, I'd been kind of off the grid for a while, hiding in Wisconsin, feeling sorry for myself for years about my life and where it had gone and wondering what I should do with my life, and kind of looking up at Heavenly Father and, you know, saying, "What do you want from me?" And the phone rang one day.
And
my answer.
And what did you think of me? Tell the truth.
I didn't recognize you, really, honestly.
And then what else did you say?
Well, I guess when it came to your burns and not having ever known anybody that had been burned, I just felt it would take some time for me to get used to that.
Well, that's a kind way of saying it.
That's what it sounded like in my head. So.
He said, wow, you sure have changed. I don't know if I like those scars. I don't know if I can get used to that. What would you do with a jerk like that?
Marry him.
Well, that's what I did after I cut his hair and put him in the bath. I said, by the way, please scrub. I love you. Do I remind you every day? Anyway, so we kind of stared at each other and we gave each other a hug, and I kind of accidentally said, nice to smell you. Oh, I'm sorry. We had, as you can tell, quite a bit of these large valleys and hills we had to cross, and I'm grateful for it. But what we learned from it, forgiveness. That was hard. How could you forgive it? You marry it.
Can I just say this to friends that are actually living now, like, and was whatever, but I went on to, she's married? And so I went on to...
You saw my Facebook page?
Yeah.
Oh, with me and my sister?
He's
that one's, yeah.
And I thought, wow, opposites really do attract.
Yeah, a lot of people go, which one's your sister now on that picture?
No, it wasn't for the wedding. I promise. It was simply, if you ever want to see me again, it's got to come off. Because it was matted.
Because I was living in Wisconsin. Every time I came to Utah to visit her, my hair would get shorter and shorter each time. It's like really weird. Something about the water here, I'm not sure.
But we had to let go of this thing called judgment. So if you've been keeping a list, the next is let go of judgment. All kinds. Let go of religious judgment. Let go of judgment about what you see about somebody else. Let go of the boundaries. Stop it. If you're used to parking in the same row in the same place all the time when you go to the store, change your pattern. That's a judgment. That parking spot is mine. He parks in the back, and I'm like, no, I have a front row, and it's called Rennell's parking spot. Is that not true?
Yes. I like to walk.
So, there we go. We are opposite. But we've had to learn even the smallest amount of judgment you have to let go of. Let go of those things around you that you hold on to in your home and in your life. They hold zero value, really, other than sentimental. Keep them in your mind and in your brain and then get rid of it, because it will be gotten rid of for you. Because I believe in agency, and I believe that things can change due to agency. But we are going to watch this country and this nation change. When I asked about this nation and what was going to happen to this country, and I looked at the world below me, I watched its creation from the very beginning to the end. I watched every event that would take place. All the wars and the Third World War and the final. We're on it. The Russians will come and the Chinese will come to declare what's theirs. They don't understand democracy and freedom. They understand ownership and communism. And I'm sorry, that's their religious right and belief. It doesn't make them bad people. When I went to Egypt, I got to know quite a few Muslims. And believe it or not, I got to meet terrorists. It's a long story. I got held hostage for 3 days, and I got held by police for 3 days, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is it. Nobody knows I'm here. I came here. James knows I'm here. My family knows. I came by myself, and I am in trouble, and I don't know what to do. And if Kathy Cox is here in the audience, I want to thank her for saving my life. I went to the bathroom. They were speaking in Arab, and I said, potty, bathroom, pee, woman, me, potty, me. Finally, they figured it out, and they looked in their bathroom, and I looked in their bathroom. And so they went ahead and let me go down the hallway to the women's bathroom. The reason why was because I knew there was a computer there that they let the guests use in this hotel. I got to the computer, and the soldiers stayed there in the room. And I ran over there. My hands were shaking. I could barely write. And I saw this in my near-death experience, so this is why I'm bringing this up, is I saw myself typing those words, okay, calm down, Renell. You remember seeing this. Stop it. I took a deep breath. I thought about contacting him. And then I went, no, you remember what happened? Yes, I remember what happened. This was before Facebook was even invented. I knew that there was a social group, and I looked up very quickly on this social group, the U.S. Embassy. And I put, help, please help, I'm being held hostage in such a hotel in Egypt. I'm an American, please help me, come get me now. And because of that, it was within hours that the U.S. Embassy made the phone call and came and got me, and I was put on the next plane home. My phones were stolen. Everything was stolen. I came home homeless and just broken person, and asking myself, why in the world did I go to Egypt? Why was I inspired when I had no money? I took every ounce of dime I had, and I knew because of my near-death experience that I would see an event happen while I was in Egypt that would help and teach me and grow. These people in their hearts believe truly that they are serving God. Even when they fight against each other, they believe they're doing it out of the love of God. The soldiers who were holding me hostage truly believed they were doing it out of the love of God. The women who get slapped truly believe that their husbands love them. You have an opportunity today to begin to get up the next morning and look at life a little differently. One of those girls that was slapped and hit by her boyfriend finally left because of the conversation we had. Beautiful girl, beautiful Muslim woman. She wrote to me today and told me she was ready to take her life because she missed the love of her life, the man who had beat her so badly. And I said, can't you just find just one little piece of sunshine and hope? Can't you find a little bit of love? And she says, love has done nothing but hurt me. I said, yes. I remember somebody who hurt me so bad that I vomited blood. I cried over him. He's standing here. I said, and love taught me something so powerful that it brought love back to me. So I want you to remember something very simple. In the near-death experience, this time is now for you to start getting your life in order. Take account of what's really important to you. People are saying, oh my gosh, she sounds scary. I know people were talking about that. A dear friend of mine wrote a book, John Pontius, Visions of Glory, and talking about these last day events. And I said, oh yeah, we talked about these. Yes, this is true. It's going to happen, and it's happening sooner than you and I expected. Some of you are just sitting there going, yeah, whatever. I'm telling you, start letting go of things. If you're ready, you're ready. There's nothing to be afraid of. It may not happen to us here in Utah. It may happen to somebody in New York. It may happen on the East Coast. It may happen in Phoenix, Arizona. The thing is you need to be ready to reach out and serve. You need to be ready to get up, leave, walk away, and serve that person who needs your help. Those families that will be suffering. Those who will have lost. You will need to have given up everything to learn what real love is. That's where love comes from, is true and utter sacrifice. Going down to the utter part of pain. Right now I'm hurting. I'm in a terrible amount of pain. I'm not here to sell books. I'm not here to get paid. James forgot the books. Oh, well. And so I said, okay, this one's for you, God. And I said, I love God enough that this one's for him. I love the people that I come to see. I love Martin. He's been here. I don't know why he's done this for so many years and does this every month. What, are you out of your mind? Bill sacrificed so much to be a support for those who've gone through it and keep going through it, who leave their bodies and still have to come back and live. Can you imagine having that kind of experience and coming back? Can you? Imagine how hard it is to live every single day and not see all the colors and the spectrum that is out there. Everything's like green, isn't it? Brown and shades of green and brown and gray, except for the sun and the flowers and few beautiful living things. I find great joy. Find the simple joy in life. Find simple fun. That's the next one. Find simple joy. This is probably what Bill and I have learned, is find simple fun. Or any of you who have had a near-death experience, look somebody in the eye. Get to know them. Don't be so scared to look them in the eye. What are they going to do? Come out and bite you? Give you the Ebola virus? What? They're going to bite off your fingers, call you ugly, judge you? So what? Reject you? You might end up marrying it. So, you never know. But take that opportunity to finally get the chance to meet somebody new every single day. That's the challenge I give you. Smile for 3 minutes every day. Just because. Or sing a stupid, silly song you knew. Just because. Because it brings you joy. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, she was one of the founders of IONS. I was sitting with her and she goes, "Scratch my back." I'm like, "You kidding? You're a stranger. I don't want to scratch your back. I have an itch. Scratch my back." She had had a stroke and so she had a hard time reaching back to scratch her back. I said, "Oh, for Pete's sake, okay, fine." And so she reached over. I was scratching her back and she goes, "Harder." So I'm like, "Okay, fine." And then she kept me going and going and going and going. And then when she finished, she says, "Oh, that was a pretty good scratch." She sat back and laughed and thought that was funny. And I thought, what the heck am I doing here meeting this woman? I don't get it. And then the next thing I noticed is she had all these bird feeders outside her window. And she goes, "Hey, did you see all those birds?" And I says, "Yeah, that's pretty cool." She goes, "I get animals come up to my house all the time. You know, it kind of comes with that NDE thing." She says, "It just comes part of you." And I says, "Yeah, I kind of know about that." And she says, "Well, see those empty feeders? Go out there and fill them." "What is that? Do I look like your slave?" I mean, I don't care if you're Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. I mean, we're equal to equal. You know, when you have near-death experience, titles don't count. What you've done doesn't really matter. It's the moment that you're experiencing. And I said, "Now, do I count this as service or a demand?" She said, "Both." I said, "Okay, that's just fine. Now, what do you think I have hanging outside my window? How many feeders?" "Six." And guess who put them all up? He put the feeder up because he found out I love birds, and so he put up all these feeders, and all our neighbors think we're crazy. And then when I got married, you know, I wanted to let butterflies go. And this is why I'm asking you to find joy, love, fun. Because what it does is it creates a thing called oneness. Do you know what it is to be in a oneness? Do you really know what it is to be one with an animal? They're so innocent that they don't know guile. They don't know judgment. They know fear, what they feel from you, but they don't know guile. So if you can come in a place of oneness and become a part of them and a part of their world of innocence and love and purity, they will become one with you and you will combine as one heart, one mind, one soul. James, bless his heart, he wanted to have a butterfly release because I don't know, there's this weird thing, butterflies seem to find me everywhere. And so he wanted to have this spectacular butterfly release. So he ordered 50 monarch butterflies for our wedding. And so we opened up this basket and what happened? They didn't want to leave. They all ended up all over my bouquet and ended up all over me. So I was covered from head to toe with butterflies. And it's not because I'm this great person. So I felt so bad for James. He spent so much money on all these butterflies. I took one of them and put it on his little boutonniere. And it stayed the whole time. It's because if you can hear my voice, it's the only thing I can give you tonight. It is the most precious and the most valued that no price can ever be put on. And that's my love. I truly love you. I love Martin for his dedication and his Bill for his courage. I love my dear friend who always puts my mic on for how many years now? Robert. Little. who's got a bigger heart than anyone I know. And over the years, the love just gets greater and greater. You never know what your life will do to change another life in just such a simple way. Shortly after the accident and shortly how I came back, I chose to come back because I knew I was going to have a son. Otherwise, I would never have chose this. It was him that convinced me that there was still so much more for me to learn about what love is, to experience love in every way, from its utter bottom to its utter top, its utter sacrifice. It was looking in his eyes and him telling me about his part in saving the Constitution and what would be left of America. He says, "Mom, we could find somebody else, but only you will love me and see me for who I am and what I can do." So I made the hardest choice I ever made. And I said, "Nate, I will go back. I'll go back for you." I said, "I can't do this alone. I just can't. And there's something you need to know. This room is filled tonight, filled with so many angels and spirits. You have no idea." I look around the room and I am blessed to have the bell gone. I am blessed to see more than what is here. I am blessed to know so many who love you and who are with you and still want you to know they love you. And you know who they are. They want you to live life and love it. Get up in the morning and see the sun. Love the sun and love your day. But most of all, love each other. Shortly after I came home from the hospital, I was bandaged and I had healed awfully fast. I just got through surgery, actually, 5 weeks ago, so forgive me for all my emotions. I'm in a lot of pain right now. I had gotten all these bandages off and they were in a pile. I looked out the window and I saw the neighbor's house was on fire and I screamed, "Oh my gosh, the neighbor's house is on fire. Terry, call 911. Go help him." She said, "I'm not going over there." I said, "Then call 911. And I heard a very strong man's voice that said, "Get over there. Get over there now. They're asleep." I said, "What? What? Are you kidding me? Face the flames again? Get over there. They're asleep." Yeah, no. "Get over there. They're asleep." I quickly threw on some clothes and I ran out the door. And in the fog, just like that day, I fell and I hurt myself. I still bear the scars on my hands from my donors falling off and bleeding. I laid on the ground. The fire was still going on the house. I screamed, "Get out, get out," thinking Terry was in the plane. Again, the voice said, "This is not the plane. Get up, get over there. They're asleep." "Oh, okay." I went over there, banged on the front door. Nobody answered. With everything I had, I kicked and I banged on that front door. I saw the garage door popping up and down. I thought, I'll go through the garage and go through the door and go help those people. I went into the garage between two cars and boom, the garage door came down and locked me into the garage. The flames were toward where the door was. I could not get near the flames. It was just too overwhelming and it was coming up over the top of my head. The smoke was piling up pretty quick. I started looking around, and what do you think I saw? I saw a BMW and an old Volkswagen. And my thought was, well, somebody's in there. I was told they're asleep. I have to wake them up. I'll bang on the cars. That's what I'll do. I'll kick and bang on the cars. Now, to give you my mentality still at that point, I looked over at the BMW and thought, oh, that's too nice of a car. I'll kick the BMW. I'll kick the Volkswagen. So I'm kicking this Volkswagen with everything I have and hoping I didn't scratch the BMW. Finally, this woman screamed and I said, "If you're okay, get out of your house. Your house is on fire." And with the strength of Goliath, I felt and I made my way back to the garage. I gave the garage one large kick, which caused the garage to fly open. The smoke came out. So did I. I ran to the front door. She saw me. She took one look at me, screamed and said, "Is this from the fire?" I said, "No, I promise it's not from this fire." And I said, "Is everyone out?" She says, "Oh, no, my kids are still in their beds." I said, "Okay, let's go back in and get them out." So we crawled underneath the smoke. We grabbed both babies. we ran out to the front lawn, and in that moment, the whole house collapsed on top of that beautiful BMW. And we then held each other and said, thank you, thank you. She says, what are you thanking me for? I said, you'll never understand. The one thing that I had to overcome in my fear was fire, and I had to face it once again. There's a program called Stop, Drop, and Roll, if you know it. You're looking at the founder. That is something I have kept very quiet for over the years, because it doesn't matter. I let it go. It was turned over to me, and then I turned it over to the fire department, and it has gone worldwide. We've cut burns by 40%. There are so many other foundations that I've worked on, and I've watched people's lives changed. But the most important life that I'm working on right now is standing right behind me and standing right here and the kids I have at home and all of you. So when you wake up tomorrow morning, what is your goal? If the sun is out, to love, to laugh, to smile for 3 minutes. There's a wonderful man who came and spoke here at IONS. I hope he comes again. I hope they invite him out again. He talked about, and I use it with my clients, looking up and smiling. I knew about that. That was done at the University of Virginia. They found that if you look up and smile for 3 minutes, you will change the dopamine, the serotonin in your brain, and you will start to begin to overcome depression. Depression is one of the greatest black plagues. I will not tell you how it's being spread, but it is being spread man-made. And if you think I'm crazy, I'm sorry. I am crazy. It is a man-made virus to anesthetize us. And so it is your job to overcome it. And so I woke up this morning, and I had my mind on the intention of love. And I was going to talk about the intention of love. And instead, this silly song came to my head. It's a dumb song, and you all know it. And I hope that you're smart enough to laugh and do a really smart thing and sing with it. Because you all know it. I know you all know it. He's a lot of fun, if you can tell. My kids think we're just a bunch of kids. They do. They think we're kids. Ready?
Yeah.
Do you remember the words?
Yeah, I got them right here.
Are they hiding? It's there.
What's the song again?
Little darling, it's been a long, long, cold winter. Little darling, it seems like years since it's been clear. Here comes the sun, doo 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 doo. Here comes the sun, I say, it's alright. Little darling, the smiles returning to their faces. Little darling, it seems like years since it's been here. Here comes the sun, doo doo doo. Here comes the sun, I say, it's alright.
Sun, here she comes.
Are you sure anybody knows the song?
I'm waiting for it.
Alright, last verse, I think.
Little darling, I feel the ice is slowly melting. Little darling, it seems like years since it's been here. Here comes the sun, doo doo doo. Here comes the sun, I say, it's all right. It's all right.
Something like that. Thanks.
So with all my love, I leave that message with you. Tomorrow the sun will come. Tragedies will come. Depression will hit every single one of your families. Suicide will be faced in every single family. And it will be up to you and how you love and see them. illness has touched every home. Drugs has touched every home. Incest. And it's only going to get so much worse, so much faster within the next year. And I hope that you can get up tomorrow morning and say, little darling, here comes the sun. Fun, fun, fun. Here comes the sun. Life is worth living and experiencing. So go out and experience it tomorrow. I love you.
Is your new book out?
It will be coming out very, very soon. And can you believe it? We're working on a movie. They said would never be seen on big screen because who would ever do a near-death experience on the big screen? Is that funny? You wanted to ask a question? Yes. The book is really going to be kind of where things left off right after the last book, because it will talk a lot about some out-of-body experiences that I've had and some experiences that I've had with some wonderful people that are actually in this room and the wonderful truth that they brought to my life.
What would you say to the statement of it's the end of the world when we die? Because I think that each one of us actually face that.
Every one of us do, yeah.
When we get sick, when there's a physical tragedy, I mean, I guess I'm wondering about your statement that it's coming, you know, like something big. I don't know if it's the end of the world, but I guess I'm wondering how that would...
How to deal with it? How to face it? Is it truth?
Yeah, it is the truth.
It is the truth.
Yeah, so I guess that's... I want to hear you comment on that. Thank you.
Actually, I have a friend here who knows that I've faced it a couple times and have faced a lot. And James knows. The only thing that I find for me, and each one of you have your ways of coping, but find coping skills to deal with pain, suffering, hurt. Find it, because when it comes, you've got to have it ready. All of us don't think very deeply about, oh, that moment I get depressed, what am I going to do? Am I going to get up? Am I going to go for a walk? Am I going to sing a song? Am I going to pick up a good book? Am I going to call my best friend? Or what are you going to do? For me, poor James gets that privilege. So get prepared. Yeah, that's a good thing to say. James said to tell you it's not the end of the world, it's just how it will change. Because the world will change. It's not that the world will come to an end. It is will be a vast change. Vast different political change. Vast change in energy. A vast change in weather. We will not have continents the way that we know them. We will have islands that won't exist anymore and new islands that will appear. And people that we will get to know that we never knew existed.
How long until the dollar collapses, and how long until we have nuclear war?
How long before the dollar collapses? I don't know where you've been. I thought it was a while ago.
I guess the official economy, I do agree with you. I know we're in the phase of the economy. When do you see the official collapse?
No, you know, I don't think it'll ever come out officially. I really don't. I think things will roll fast and move forward quickly. I think other nations see us very weak already. I know that for a fact. Any other questions?
You mentioned visions of glory, and I'm wondering if you've had similar, I guess you would call them visions. Do you see the same things that he did?
I love Spencer, is what he goes by, and John. I miss John very, 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 very much. Sorry.
So
I get very emotional. Yes, I do every night.
Him or your experience as well?
Yes. Jonathan, before John died, and Terry and I were very close friends. And we spent a lot of time together and went on vacation together. So John Pontius, Terry is his wife.
Okay.
So
that information is coming from... his experience.
From his experience and Spencer's experience, and Terry is publishing a lot of his Unblog Me that's going to be coming out soon. So I'm really excited because John was a great man and a great visionary.
Are you familiar with Spencer? Have you had conversations?
Spencer has chosen to remain anonymous.
This whole near-death experience is really new to me, and forgive me, so I haven't read your book, your first book, so I don't really know your story very well. When you said that objects move and people knock on door, are you saying that after your near-death experience, you had a lot more experiences?
Yes, that's very common with near-death experiences. Some don't. I happen to be the lucky one. I don't know. What about you, Bill? Visions, dreams? No? He had quite a few right after his experience. For me, it just never seems to end.
But you were very intuitive before, is what
I was
saying.
I came in according to the charts and stars and the alignments of God. Yes, I came that way.
I need to just interject something real quick. You have to kind of keep in mind that part of the near-death experience can be visions of future events, but also part of the near-death experience, which I don't think Ronell touched on, but it's equally important, is that we do have the power to change the course of events.
Yes.
And that
love, and thank you, Bill, for saying that, because love is the only energy that changes that.
So if somebody sees something that may be frightening or may lead us in a direction that we feel could be destructive to us individually or as a society, we also have an equal amount of power to make changes for that. I mean, that's really the beauty of the near-death experience, is that, if you will, it opens windows to many different scenarios.
Exactly, and correct, Bill.
Probably the two greatest gifts that we were given, Ronell touched on one, which is love, but the other one is free agency.
That's correct.
And through that free agency, we have the choice to accept destiny or to change it.
And we can change it. I think I remember saying that I don't talk about time, because there are some things that are destined, but there are things that change because of choice. And love is such a powerful energy, it's tangible. We can, through the power of love, and it is literally just a simple loving, caring, sharing, doing simple things that can make a huge, huge difference. It's that choice to make that change through small things that we do.
You said earlier in the discussion that the Chinese and Russians will be coming our way?
Yes.
Do you know whether or not America and our Constitution will somehow survive this onslaught?
That'll all those things are, let me put it to you this way, they're on the map, but we, in our choices, can do something about it now to make that change. As Bill said, we can, never did I think that something called stop, drop, and roll would change a whole world. There's not a place I've gone in the world where I haven't said, do you know stop, drop, and roll? And I haven't had somebody go, oh, yeah, I know that. So you can make a change. One person can make a difference. That's why I brought it up. You can. And it's really about what you choose to do. It could be something so small. But in reality, it can change the world. What is your mission and purpose? Do you know? Then it's time to start thinking about what your mission and purpose and what you're here to do. Find out. I wish I had more time. I was trying to be respectful of everybody's time. Please learn what your mission and purpose is. I can't tell you how many clients come and sit with me, and the first thing they say is, I'm not enough. And then the next thing is, they say, I don't have a mission and purpose. I don't know what it is. Can you tell me? I say, well, that's for you to learn. I need you to know that this is my experience. Just like it is for each one of you have an experience. Those who are Buddhists will see Buddha. Those who see and understand God will see God. So I want you to understand this is just Ronell sharing her experience.
You said that one person can make a difference.
Yes.
And your story is so powerful. And thank you for that, that we have felt. I'd like to share that this Sunday is Citizenship Sunday, and throughout the world, millions of Christians will be praying for our nation.
Yay.
And with the free agency and the love, I invite everyone in this room to pray that we may make a difference for our nation.
Yay! I'll be on that one. Thank you for sharing that.
It seemed to me that when you were describing the tragedies and the pain and the family suffering, it came to my, and the islands, you know, it came to my mind that we are not loving the earth enough, because it seemed to me that those are climate changes, and that what is really going to make an impact is something like a climate change, like the earth coming under these changes that we are producing. It seems to me that the nation that we live in is not the only nation in the world, and that we share with many nations.
That's
and
correct.
So they are important as well. So why should we say that the world is going to change just because of our nation?
It isn't. It is worldwide. Like I said, I had an opportunity to go to Egypt and be in many places in the country, and there are choices being made all over the world, and different choices. The only real true choice that I have found in my personal, and this is Renelle's experience, for oneness is love and purity. That's what I have come to learn that creates change.
This will sound probably random. I lost my dog a few weeks ago, and I'm just wondering, when you're on the other side, did you see the spirits of pets and loved animals?
Yes. Of course. Everything's created spiritually. Yes. Everything living, everything alive is spiritual. And so, yes. As if a flower is alive on the other side, so is a bird, so is a horse, and so is many types of animals.
And do they come and visit us, even if we don't know it?
Yes. I remember putting down my, I'm a falconer, and I put down my hawk, and I will never forget when he came right at my eyes. He just poof, came right into him and just flew right straight at me. And I'll never forget that. That was much later after he died. Yes.
Based upon your experience, Heavenly Father doesn't reward us or condemn us based upon what church or religion we select, does he?
I believe he does not judge us that way.
I personally believe there's goodness and truth in all people, all churches and all religions, and nobody has any business knocking someone else's cherished belief.
That's absolutely required. We need to respect humanity and love humanity, no matter what religion or to where they came from or what color or race. As I told you, Dawei, her name's Dawei, is very much Muslim. And I love her with all of my heart. And she has very strong feelings against America. But we have very strong feelings for each other as friends. I just want to say one last remark. We all belong to one big race called the human family. So let's pray for all of us.